Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel. It's Friday. You made it. I have a disc golf tournament tomorrow, which is Saturday, and Sunday, two rounds. I guess it's going to be 23 or 24 holes each round. Kind of, there's some extra holes on this course. I've played this course before, but it's been a couple years. But they've added some holes since I was there last time. I haven't seen the holes, so I guess we're just going to wing it. So I got two rounds tomorrow, so 46 to 48 holes, and then one round on Sunday. I'm playing in the tougher division, the advanced division, in contrast to what I did a couple weeks ago in Orlando, but I'm still looking forward to it. I've usually played well at this course, so we'll just have to see. I threw a couple times this week. I've not been throwing well, so I'm going to go out today and see if I can get it all together for tomorrow and Sunday. It's down in Sarasota. It's at a place called Water Tower Park, which, how do I put this nicely, has a certain cultural element to it that tends to hang out in the park. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, if you know what I mean. But we don't worry too much about that. I mean, there's a bunch of us down there. But I would have to say that if you are down there playing that course by yourself, who knows what could happen. I'm just being honest. That's been my experience anyway. So there's that. But actually, it's a pretty nice course, very popular course in Sarasota, and it's about an hour away. So I'll be driving down and driving back each day. I saw the video of what happened in Times Square yesterday. Just completely disturbing. You probably know the news about this guy, whether he was high or he's drinking and driving. I don't think necessarily that he was drinking and driving. I think that it was something else. It wasn't terrorism. But if you watch the videos, plural, because in New York City you're going to have various cameras all over the place, both government and private ones. He's just sitting there in traffic. I warn you, if you go out and find it, I'm sure it's on YouTube. I think that I saw it at Hot Air, which I think was linked to YouTube. But I need to warn you before you watch it that it is really, really disturbing. It's not maybe as disturbing as seeing somebody have their head cut off, but it's up there. If only for the fact that you see him sitting in traffic just like any other car. Sitting there, I think there's some sort of small school bus behind him, something like that. A couple cars in front of him, and he's just sitting there like any other. There's people walking by. And he gets down to this intersection just like any other car. Then all of a sudden does a complete U-turn and starts driving, speeding on the sidewalk, going the exact opposite direction. And people go flying, and the cameras catch it, I'm going to say, from six or seven different points of view, at least. And whoever spliced it all together, you see each person or persons being hit all at the same time. You watch it, and you wonder how it's possible that only one person got killed. I don't know which person it was, because it shows in those videos, you can see every single person getting hit from the beginning to the end, where he's running up behind these people and there's posts in the ground. I don't know if he didn't see them or what. He just runs smack into them, and the car comes off the ground, then turns to the side, and that's how it ends up. And you've seen the pictures of that. But those people who were standing right around the post, they would have been hit too if those posts hadn't been there. And of course, that's why those posts are there. Although those posts are probably for just cars going out of control by accident, not on purpose. But people just flying everywhere. I'm going to say, I think that one woman was killed. She was there. Was she from Alabama or Georgia? She wasn't from New York. 18 years old, a young girl was killed. She was a tourist. And you hear that 10, 11 people were injured. Well, the car must have hit 40 people. And probably what saved these people was that the car that he was in is fairly aerodynamic. And some of the people, when they were hit, they kind of just got nudged off. I mean, they kind of like swooped up and then just landed beside the car. Whereas if it had been a car that had more of a, like an older car with a flatter front end or, you know, a kind of truck, probably would have drugged these people for blocks. And it was the design of the car that I think saved a lot of these people from being killed. There are no sharp objects on it, nothing to cut them or anything. Very aerodynamic. Of course, a plastic bumper, aerodynamic headlights, and I forget what kind of cars. It was a relatively new car. That's what probably saved more people from getting killed. What you also see, if you've ever watched any Hollywood movie where people are being run down by a car, and of course it's all fake, you're going to notice that Hollywood gets it pretty right when it happens in real life. So it's just amazing. He's just sitting there, and then all of a sudden does this U-turn, and just people start going everywhere. Just boom, you know. Like, just imagine a car, what a car looks like going through a cornfield with the stalks all up and making a path and the stuff's just flying. That's what it looks like. And somewhere in there, this girl got killed. I'm not sure at what point, where she was. There is a woman who is walking kind of by herself toward the end of the video, and she turns around and she tries to get out of the way. And I think that is the girl. It could be somebody else. But this woman, instead of being just being glanced off, like I mentioned, she gets drug along. And I think that that's what eventually kills people. It's not getting hit and just being thrown to the side, as long as they don't land on their head, of course. It's being drug along or dragged, whatever the word would be, that I think kills people in circumstances like this, in this kind of situation. The guy was moving. Just guns it, does the U-turn. So if you're going to watch it, it's disturbing. And if you knew any of the people who were involved and injured, I would probably recommend that you not watch it at all. But, and then they had the picture of him, maybe even some video of him getting out of the car and running, and then a bunch of people tackled him and held him till the cops got there. It was not terrorism. This guy doesn't drive like a drunk person, so it's hard to say. Maybe hallucinating on drugs. Maybe it was a suicide by cop. He wanted to be shot. But this isn't your normal drinking and driving story where a car is, you know, swerving all over the street and then happens to swerve onto a curb up over the curb and goes along and comes back. Nothing like this. This was totally calculated. Totally planned. Totally. So I feel bad for everybody involved, and especially the family of the girl who got killed. Horrible. Let's move on to the show. And maybe we'll want to come back to that, because Kevin Williamson wrote an excellent piece at National Review about driving under the influence in the United States and how it's changed over the years. Maybe I'll get to that before the show is over. Kevin Williamson, more and more I'm thinking he might be the smartest person on the planet. Joe Biden is out there. he said that Hillary, and I don't know where he was giving the speech. I'm sure it was in the article. I did not read where it was. All I care about is what he says. I don't care where he's saying it. He says that Hillary was not a great candidate, and he says he would have been a great candidate. I agree with both statements. And in fact, if you go back and find prior episodes of this show, maybe going back to this time last year, being that the primary season was kind of being wrapped up, or maybe even before that, I still couldn't figure out why Joe Biden, it was a question mark in my mind why he didn't run. Maybe it was because he didn't want to try to clean up, if he got elected, all the problems that Barack Obama started. I think he would have won. I don't think there is any doubt that had he run in the primaries and really tried to win, instead of just giving it the old college try, you know, just for Joe, you know, just just for the heck of it, if he really would have tried and raised the money and done the speeches and kissed the babies and everything else, I know pretty sure that he would have won the nomination. I know that he would have taken a lot of crap from the Clinton people. It's Hillary's turn, don't you know? She lost to Barack Obama back in 2008. Now it's her turn, and now you want to jump in and do this. You were got to be president almost. You were vice president. What are you doing? I think that he could have overcome that. I think that within the overall Democrat Party, that Joe Biden is thought of much more highly than Hillary Clinton is, despite everybody trying to tell us how popular she is. I think that had he run, he would have gotten more of the popular vote than Hillary Clinton did. She got about 66 million. I think he would have gotten more of that, more than that. And then because of that, I think he would have won Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and he would be the next president of the United States. I don't have much doubt about that at all. And of course, I'm sure the Clinton people did everything they could to try to stop him from running. And maybe he didn't run because, you know, Hillary Clinton has something on him. And I know that he said nice things about her. But now that it's all over and Donald Trump is president, the truth comes out. And I think this is the truth. I'm no Joe Biden fan. I think he's horrible. But he is right that he would have been a great candidate for the Democrats if just the concern is winning. I think so. I think that he would have been, if it plays out the same way on the Republican side, I think it would have been much harder for Donald Trump to demonize him than, you know, what went on with Hillary Clinton and everything about her. So I think, though, Joe Biden missed his chance. He's older than both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Maybe he's thinking if he can maintain some, you know, decent health, he can run in 2020. Maybe. But I tend to believe that, you know, when you're 70-some years old, 3 years is a long time. If you're 18, 21 seems like it's tomorrow. But when you're 70-something and you're thinking about 3 years ahead, there is absolutely no guarantee you're going to get there. All sorts of things can pop up. Heart attacks, aneurysms, strokes, you know, everything, cancer that you didn't know about that kills you within 6 months. So a lot of things can happen. And don't get me wrong, I want Joe Biden to live until he's 150 years old. I just don't want him to be president or in any other political position. But he's right. And if Democrats want to, you know, whine about Donald Trump being president, whether, you know, he got it by hook or by crook, legally, illegally, with the Russians or not the Russians, all they had to do was get Joe Biden to run instead of Hillary Clinton, and they wouldn't be in this position now. This is certainly a situation where neither party got the candidate that was probably best for each. I think every day we see that Donald Trump was not the best candidate for the Republican Party, and I don't believe that he was the best candidate for the American people. I continue to say that. On the Democrat side, Joe Biden would have been the better candidate for the Democrat Party. And frankly, had he been able to win, I think that he would be better for the American people than Hillary Clinton would have been. Even though, once again, I wouldn't vote for him either. That's just the way I think. And so in each case, the people who voted for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and Joe Biden choosing not to run, and the other possibilities on the Republican side, there's a lot of blame to go around about why we now have Donald Trump as president. This was a case where I think everybody is losing. That's what I think. And maybe that's a difference between Donald Trump being elected and maybe Barack Obama being elected. Although, 2 years later, the Democrats lost the House and they've lost over 1,000 seats since he got elected in 2008. So maybe that wasn't the best for them either. But I think the Republican Party still has yet to feel the full effects or full effect of Donald Trump becoming president. And when I say full effect, I feel the full negative effect. So I don't. Hey, I've always said, you know, Joe Biden is as much as I think he and Hillary have known each other for many years, and kind of Barack Obama came on the scene later. You know, Joe Biden goes back to the 1970s, and Hillary Clinton, of course, goes back to the early 90s with her husband becoming president. They were friends and colleagues well before Barack, since Barack Obama was almost a teenager. But it's clear that at some point Joe Biden started to care much more for Barack Obama than he did for Hillary Clinton. And I'm guessing this happened even before Joe Biden was picked to be Barack Obama's vice president, which in retrospect probably was a really good choice on Barack Obama's part. And I give him credit for that, even though I dislike all of them. A very smart pick for the Obama, for Barack Obama and his people when he was running for president. But it's clear that I think that Joe Biden is much friendlier with Barack Obama than Hillary Clinton, and this continues to show that this is the case, to the point where Joe Biden has no problem saying negative things about Hillary Clinton. She was not a great candidate. Hillary was not a great candidate. That is the quote. Whereas I would have been a great candidate. That's the quote. So we'll see if he feels any backlash from this. I guess where I was going to go with the prior statement about Barack Obama is that Joe Biden saying this furthers my idea, being that I think Barack Obama and Joe Biden are very close, that in the end, Barack Obama never liked Hillary Clinton at all. Never did it. Never liked her. Not one. I don't think that he, I don't know if he ever cared for her, even before he ran for president. I don't know anything about that. But I'm believing that what happened in 2008 and the contest between them and the things Bill Clinton said and what the other Clintonites did, those were things that Barack Obama never stopped thinking about. I think they rubbed him the wrong way. I think it rubbed his wife the wrong way. I think it rubbed Valerie Jarrett the wrong way. And I think eventually that Joe Biden got caught up in that as well. Maybe rightfully so. And him saying this stuff about Hillary Clinton now shows to me that I'm not so sure Barack Obama wanted Hillary Clinton to be president. I can't help but think that. I can't help but think it. And that may be one of the reasons that she lost, that insider people might have known, you know what, he's saying nice things out in public and he's done a couple appearances and everything, but really behind the scenes, Barack Obama really doesn't want her to win. And this would go in line with my attitude toward Barack Obama for a long time, is I don't think he ever gave a dang about any other Democrat out there. I think he thought he needed to do was be president. You know, and if you can't win with me being president, that's your problem. You want me to go show up? What, me being president isn't enough? They didn't want to give him any of the excess money that he raised, that he could have legally, that could have legally been done. So, you know, when you hear Joe Biden talk about Hillary Clinton that way, it kind of puts a little bit different of a hue to what actually went on in 2016 and what was going on behind the scenes and who was really pushing Hillary Clinton, you know, to become president, and why a lot of these people in these areas of Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin didn't show up. Certainly does get your attention. But I agree with him. I don't agree with Joe Biden very often, but she was not a great candidate. And he would have been a great candidate in the context of what he would have been able to do for Democrats. I think that he would have won. He would have secured the White House for at least another 4 years for the Democrats. I think that even though Barack Obama seemed to decrease in popularity from 2008 to 2012, getting less of the vote, I'm not sure that would have carried over to Joe Biden. I think that Joe Biden could have easily have gotten as many votes as Barack Obama did in 2012 and gotten as many votes as Hillary Clinton did in 2016, which, and any one more popular vote here and there could add up. And really, I think also that a lot of those people who voted for Barack Obama in 2012 and switched over to vote for Donald Trump in 2016, if Joe Biden runs, I don't think that happens. I think they stick with the Democrat Party. They stick with Joe Biden. I believe that as well. I think that Joe Biden would have beaten Donald Trump about the same way that Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College. I think that's about what it would have ended up. Too late now. Too late now. Let's move on to something else. Anthony Weiner. He's going to plead guilty. And you get the idea that he's almost getting off easy. There is no pun in that sentence, please. He's going to plead guilty to transferring obscene material to a minor. This has been a long time coming. Once again, no pun intended. You just hate. I mean, I have to talk about this, but there's certain words in the English language that you just double entendres, and I do not intend them. He's just another bad guy. He's just another pervert. What was this? Carlos Danger, whatever his name was. This guy, you know, remember, he was in the House. And this all happened. And, you know, Andrew Breitbart became famous. This is how long this has been going on. That Andrew Breitbart was still alive when this all started. Going back to 2012, that's 5 years ago. That's when Andrew Breitbart died, what, right? 2012? This goes back to 2011, and now 6 years later, finally, Anthony Weiner is going, and you got to love his last name regarding all of this, that he's finally going to plead guilty to something. And I still think that he should be very thankful that this is it. I'll be honest with you. I wonder if we still really know everything there is to know about Anthony Weiner and what goes on in his private life. Not that we deserve to know what goes on in his private life, but I mention it in the context of his criminal private life. You know, I do this other show I talk about. It's called Unfound. It's a missing persons program. I've learned a lot about crime in the United States in the last 6, 7 months, 8 months, talking to people who have, lost people to disappearances, loved ones. And when I see everything that Anthony Weiner did, and we now know a lot of it, of course, we don't know if it's a lot, it could just be the tip of the iceberg, but I think that's my point, that when you hear about somebody who is sending pictures to underage girls and all that, everything that he did, this usually sometimes can transfer into other things. And if I were a cop or investigator in New York, might start looking about anything else that Anthony Weiner might have been doing. You know, instead of just over the internet, but actually in person. You know, you learn these things that men who are into this type of stuff actually go and do this stuff out in public too. And that's really all I want to say, because this is not a criminal show, or, you know, and this, I try to make keep this show as family friendly as possible, but I just wonder if Anthony Weiner is a bigger criminal than what this charge or any of these other charges, you know, can tell. I wonder. I can't help thinking about that. He seems to have an obsession or an addiction that, and what you learn about that is that somebody who seemingly has that addiction over the internet probably is acting out on that addiction in public as well. And if his, you know, fascination, his obsession, his addiction is with young girls and underage girls, then maybe he has done that kind of stuff in public as well, and they just haven't known about it. And maybe there are some girls who are keeping their mouth shut. I think it would be worth looking into at this point. He is a bad guy. And after all of this, at one point, just not too long ago, he wanted to run for, or he tried to run for, what was it, mayor of New York? I think that was when de Blasio won, right? And he got some votes, and not a lot of votes, I don't think, but he got some votes from Democrats who knew this about him anyway, although there hadn't been any charges against him, but he's pleading guilty. And I haven't even gotten to the other part of it with his wife, and who knows what she knew about him doing all this. Was he doing it behind her back, or was this just something she knew that she knew she couldn't control? And then Hillary Clinton and how all of her emails and information got on his computer. But he's pleading guilty. I guess I still think that he's getting off easy. And don't think, though, you know, Anthony Weiner is not an old guy. He probably has another good 30 years on this earth. Don't think this is the last that we've heard of Anthony Weiner and him being involved in stuff like this. Don't be surprised. And anybody who knows him, and if you have young kids and everything, you got to keep them about 100 miles away from this guy. And if they see him online, go the other direction as well. Let's move on to something else. We'll try to fit this in, and maybe this will probably go past into the second part of the show. Betty Jo Shelby was the policewoman who shot and killed this man who just happened to be black in Tulsa. This was a case from last year. If you'll remember it, she came upon, she was by herself as a cop in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. She came upon an SUV that was parked in the middle of the road. And she was investigating, hey, what's going on here? The guy gets out of his car, doesn't seem to be listening to her, and other cops show up, and they're trying to get him under control. Well, he's not listening to what they say. And he tries to kind of saunter. This guy tries to saunter back to his SUV. And the cops don't want to allow him to get there. He jumps in the car. Who knows where he's going to go? So they try to tase him. And the guy allegedly reaches into his SUV. And Betty Jo was thinking that he was reaching for a gun. She shot him and killed him. Now, you should know, it turns out in the end that there was no gun in the car. On the other hand, this guy was high on PCP, a very hallucinogenic drug. Well, the prosecutor in Tulsa brought a charge against her for, what was it, voluntary manslaughter, not necessarily murder, but voluntary manslaughter. She went to trial as a cop, thinking that she shouldn't have done what she did, and the jury found her not guilty yesterday. So she is walking away a free woman. And there were four white people, and, eight white people and four black people on the jury, and they all found her not guilty in the shooting of this guy. I want to continue to talk about this after the break, and go into this a little bit deeper, because, you know, watching the video, I have some ideas about what was going on. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back on America's Conservative Podcast. I want to continue to talk to you about this shooting that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma last year, in which Betty Jo Shelby, a policewoman there, shot and killed this guy who had gotten out of his SUV and then tried to get back into it. Another cop showed up and she ended up killing him, and she went to trial and she was found not guilty. The prosecutor thought they had a good case, obviously. Maybe this is a malicious prosecution. Maybe it's a prosecution that was done just to appease certain members of the community, both black and otherwise, possibly. But, and I think that maybe a few months ago, maybe 3 months ago, 4 months ago, was she on 60 Minutes? She did an interview. I'll be honest, I didn't happen to see it. I might have heard about it or read about it, but I did not see it. But here's what's pretty clear to me, and it may be one of the reasons, and I don't know if this ever came up during the trial, but if you watch the video, and the video from the helicopter was flying overhead when Betty Jo Shelby was out of her car, and it was just, at the time, it was just her, or she, and the guy. And I'm sorry, but I did not write his name down. It seems to me that he is listening to her as long as she is there by herself. Why do I say that? Because as soon as the other cop's car has come into view, the guy starts going back to his SUV. And I'm wondering if Betty Jo subconsciously realized that. Because you know what that tells me? It tells me that the only reason that that guy was listening to her was he was hoping to get close enough to her so he could attack her, even though she had a gun. You watch it. You can watch the video. The video starts with him actually backing away, going further away from his vehicle. As soon as the other cars show up, he starts going back toward his vehicle. Why would he do that? Because he thought, well, I can certainly beat up and maybe steal the gun off of this woman cop. But if these other cops are going to show up, then I'm not going to be able to do that. Well, I'm going to try to get away. Or even the cop, you know, the cops might have been thinking, well, he was backing up and now he's going back to the car. Now that the rest of us are here, maybe he's going to get a gun. I think even though the guy was on PCP, I think that you can look at his actions and make a pretty good guess that that's what was going on. I think that that guy, when he got pulled over and got out of his vehicle and saw that the cop that was there was a female, he automatically decided that he was going to beat the crap out of her because she was alone. There is no doubt in my mind. But as soon as the other cops found out, showed up, he says, well, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore. He goes back to his vehicle. And my attitude, as should be any law-abiding citizen's attitude in the United States, is you do what the cops say. Now, this guy, he's on drugs. That's his fault. If he's on drugs and he gets pulled over and his mind can't figure out how to listen, that's his problem. That's not the cop's problem. So he goes back to his vehicle. And whether he's reaching inside or was trying to get into it, he was shot. And you can hear in the calls from that day, her yelling, you know, shots fired and all of that. She's also stated in her testimony, and she took the stand for herself, which I think is, You know, it seems to me, I follow a lot of court cases, and it doesn't seem like a lot of defendants take the stand in their own defense anymore. Is that just a perception? I know they, of course, have the right to, but their lawyers usually say, you don't want to do that. And usually these defendants listen to their lawyers. It just doesn't seem you see that too much anymore. But Betty Jo did take the stand, and what she said was that the reason, what was in her mind as the guy was going back to his vehicle, and she thought that he was reaching inside it, she seemed to think that the window was down. The people who defend this guy who was killed say the window was up, so there's no way he could have reached into his car. He was on drugs. Who knows what he was seeing at that time? She remembered a training video when she went to the academy, police academy, I guess in Oklahoma, of a situation where there's a pullover, there's a guy out of his vehicle, and he goes to reach back into his vehicle. And in that training session, the guy is reaching in for a gun. And she said that's what was going through her mind when she thought she saw him go back to his car and try to get into his car, reach into the car, whatever this guy was doing. That was in her mind. And to believe it, this was from USA Today. Of course, there's been many different outlets that have covered this in various ways, from saying that, yes, she deserved to be found not guilty, to the other people saying that it's a travesty of justice. And we'll see what happens in Tulsa the next few days, if there's going to be riots or whatever else. But it very well may be that testimony that saved her. Maybe that's the reason that the defense lawyer wanted her or allowed her to go up on the stand. Now, that's something surely the prosecution would check. They would know, they would be able to check and see if there was some sort of training that she received and some video. It's a, you know, they try to recreate things that cops might get into, and they're going to probably go check that. They probably did and probably found out she was telling the truth. Yes, that when during her training there was a seminar or a day, a class, different kinds of pullovers where you pull over somebody from speeding and you get the person out of the car and they go back to the car. You can't let somebody do that because they could be reaching in for a gun. And I'm guessing she was telling the truth. And I think that that's probably what turned that trial in her favor. I really did not follow it that closely. I remember when it happened last year. I couldn't tell you the day or month, but I remember when this happened. I remember it happening. It wasn't like something I found out like 2 weeks later. I remember the day that it happened. And, you know, at the time, you just don't know. You just don't know what the exact story was. And there was another case, where was it, in South Carolina, where there was a cop. I don't know if he's been found guilty or guilty yet, but he was the guy. I remember the video. The guy was running away, and the cop just shot him in the back, which was obviously wrong. This case of Betty Jo Shelby was not like that case in South Carolina. That South Carolina case is somewhat unique. I'm not saying haven't been other cops in bad shootings, but I think your general cop shooting is more like the Betty Jo Shelby type than the type that happened in South Carolina where that guy was shot in the back. But today, with juries and Black Lives Matter and the false meme of hands up, don't shoot, which never happened, you just never know how these cases are going to go, how these trials are going to go. And it's telling that the four black people on the jury still found Betty Jo Shelby not guilty. What I know about the case, I would say that she was not guilty as well. And I'm not sure, and I will sit here telling you that I'm not a huge defender of the police. I do think that there are bad things that go on that the police do. In my other show, we cover some cops that have been involved in some disappearances. That's true. It is out and out true. I think I try to see both sides of it, but I'm not going to get caught up in lies on one hand, but I'm not going to say that what the cops do is all the right all the time. And yes, I will be honest that it is weird how many of these cop shootings do end up where the cop isn't charged with anything. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, and I just try to judge each shooting on its own and what I think I know about it. And I do not come to any of these cases biased toward one side or the other, because I understand both sides. That there are crooked cops out there. On the other hand, I know there are a lot of people that play up these cop shootings and lie about them. So, Betty Jo Shelby probably never going to be a cop again. So we'll see what she does. I don't know if she's going to have to move somewhere else. Is the cop that was involved in the hands up, don't shoot escapade, is he still a cop? I don't think he is. I think he had to move. I'd have to look that up. I just don't remember. Let's move on to something else, and we got about 13 minutes left in the program. I was reading this article at freebeacon.com. It's not a site that I talk about too much, but I do go there and read articles there just to get a different opinion, although all these sites tend to be covering the same news. And first of all, there was an article about the best Guy Ritchie movies. He directed this Camelot or whatever it is that has come out recently that's not doing so well. And they were ranking, you know, his best movies. I guess they were going from worst to best. Snatch is not his best movie. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is Guy Ritchie's best movie. No doubt, it's not even close. Snatch is a poor copy of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. There, I said it. In the Free Beacon article, they are talking about Trump and his self-destructive tendencies. This is a good discussion. And it's interesting, and I'll have you know that this other guy was not mentioned at all in this article, but for some reason, General Patton popped into my mind as I was reading this article about Donald Trump. Because, you know, I'm a big fan of General Patton. He's probably one of the greatest generals in American history. Of course, flamboyant, somewhat polarizing. As much as everybody loved General Eisenhower, Eisenhower and Patton didn't get along. General Bradley, of course, got along with Ike a lot better than Patton did. Patton was kind of his own guy. And you could say that General Patton also had some self-destructive tendencies. And you can see a lot of similarities, at least personality-wise, between General Patton and Donald Trump. You can say they're right there. Flamboyant, outrageous, outspoken. Both of them, I guess, successful in their own way. And in General Patton's case, there's often, you know, at least played up in the movie Patton, which was one of my favorite movies, is that you wonder that, you know, how Patton would have been after World War II. Now, of course, if you don't know, he died right at the end of World War II due to a traffic accident that Bill O'Reilly turned into a book that was nothing but conspiracy, and, you know, based on conspiracy and nothing else. There was no conspiracy behind General Patton dying. It was just a freak accident. But Bill O'Reilly decided to make a book out of it, and, you know, it's disgusting. I hate that stuff. It's just like all the JFK conspiracy books. So there's the thought, what would have General Patton been like after the war? He was a guy who seemed to need war in his life. And almost like liked war a little too much. And we know about how he felt toward soldiers who had who were afraid, who had PTSD. Of course, they didn't call it PTSD at the time. They called it shell shock or something like that. And there is a scene in the movie where he slaps one of these soldiers who's like this, and he got in trouble. In real life, he got in trouble for it, although in the movie it's portrayed in a different way. But he, General Patton, did get in trouble for slapping a soldier because of this. The difference, I think, between Donald Trump and General Patton is that I think Patton always knew what he was supposed to be doing. And I think that if you read a lot about him, which I have, that he knew exactly what, even though he was outrageous and outspoken, he knew exactly what he was doing. You know, all these Trump people talk about, well, you know, these mistakes that Donald Trump makes, he's not making any mistakes. He's just thinking 10 moves ahead. No, he's not. Whereas General Patton was a guy who thought 10 moves ahead. Why? Because he was a general. He had to. He had to try to figure out what Rommel was going to do next. And he knew that there was a problem up there at Bastogne, and he might be asked to go up there and, you know, and I wouldn't say necessarily rescue, but support those, you know, guys that were surrounded at Bastogne. I think that was Bastogne. And he was prepared to do that. General Patton was not a person who handled things on the fly. That's the difference, I think, between him and Donald Trump. Although they have the same personalities, and it seemed they were divas, and they loved the publicity, and they loved being written about, and they loved winning, and Donald Trump or General Patton wanted to get all the praise of, you know, for what was going on, and he was, you know, somewhat jealous of Montgomery. If you believe and buy into all of that, in all those ways, General Patton was exactly like Donald Trump. The difference, once again, is that I think Patton knew exactly what he was doing. He was trained to do exactly what he was doing. He was a military academy graduate, graduating near the top of his class, if not at the top of his class. He was a distinguished soldier before he became a general. Of course, that's how you get to be a general. And in that position, you have to have some sort of discipline, even if you might be flamboyant and reckless in other ways. General Patton never allowed his attitude and his personality to get in the way of beating the enemy, whereas Donald Trump does. He does. And in fact, when you look at Donald Trump, it's sometimes even hard to tell who the enemy is. Sometimes, one day it's the conservatives, one day it's the Democrats, one day it's the liberals, one day it's the Justice Department, one day it's this person, one day it's that person. You know, in effect, he's creating enemies. Patton always knew who the good guys were. He, as much as he might have disagreed with Eisenhower and Bradley, he knew that they were all on the same side, even if he did want to do things a different way. That is not something that Donald Trump recognizes. He doesn't. If he did, he would take more advice than he does. Even in General Patton's case, as rambunctious and flamboyant and outrageous and stubborn and everything that he was, he at times listened to General Bradley and did listen to Ike and all of this. There's nothing like that with Donald Trump. Now, he's the president of the United States, so in a way, I guess he doesn't have a boss, but in another way, he does, and that's the American people. It is the American people. And I think there is going to be a time somewhere down the road where he's going to make the American people the enemy too, because I think that Donald Trump needs enemies, even if they're not really against him. And that is not something not a trait that Patton had. Patton knew exactly who the enemy was. It was the Nazis. It was the Third Reich. It was the Axis powers. And then even after the Germans had been defeated, he knew that the Soviets, the Russians, were going to be the next problem. While we're all over here, we must just get it out of the way right now. And he was right. He was right. It would have been ugly. Would have been dirty. I don't know what would have happened. But, you know, calling peace before the job was necessary. If the job of World War II was to rid the world of bad people and violence and all of this, then it wasn't finished. Everybody celebrated it, but it wasn't finished. And really, World War II didn't end until about 1990. Really. And General Patton knew that. I'm not so sure that Donald Trump thinks like that. And it was just something about reading this article about Trump and being self-destructive, and this is the main trait that he has that is causing his presidency to be the way it is. And I thought of Patton because some people thought that he was self-destructive, that had he just played by the rules, he could have gotten a lot farther than what he did. Maybe that's true. But in that self-destructiveness, that the obsession of the self that Patton had, to the point where he believed that he was reincarnated, that never got in the way of his job. He pushed his soldiers, and he won a lot of decisive battles, and that's why he's going to be known as one of the greatest generals in American history, right up there with Grant and others. Grant, Washington, Patton, they're all going to be there. They'll always be toward the top. But it's that lack of that knowing what is going on that differentiates Patton from Trump. And Trump is going to suffer from it. All it takes is to be lacking in one area, having all that stuff and lacking in one area, to be the difference between success and failure. And that's just not in warfare. That's just not in politics. That's in anything that you do. That you can have all these qualities, but if you're lacking in one of the main ones, these other main ones, you're probably not going to get what you want. You're not going to be able to accomplish the goals that you want. And that's something that's not going to change. This isn't like a self-destructive 20-year-old who maybe can grow out of it. Maybe he needs to go to the military to work that out of him. And just growing up and seeing how the world works, a 20-year-old you have high hopes that he or she will not continue on that path. From a 70-year-old who's self-destructive and seems to bring on more heat than he really needs, you're not going to get Donald Trump or any other 70-year-old to change. This is another problem of electing somebody who is so old. If you're going to do that, it can't be somebody who has these kind of tendencies, because they're not going to go away. If you're going to elect a 70-year-old to be president, he or she better have his total entire personality and behavior in line. The United States didn't do that this time. But I got to go. Edward Dentzel is the website. EdwardDentzel.com is the website. Podomatic and iTunes, you can find the show. RedStateTalkRadio.com is where this show plays at night. I'll just leave it at that. And what else? Twitter, USA Podcast. My other program, Unfound, new episode coming out today. The disappearance of Esther Westenbarger. She disappeared in Indiana in 2009. I hope you'll check that out at Podomatic and iTunes. Hope you have a nice weekend. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.